Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hey, everybody. Lieutenant Joe here. And I have a guest that's going to help us as we manage our officers, or really manage any people that you have in your organization. You know, we talk to a lot of topics for law enforcement, and law enforcement, while we have a unique mission, what we do, you know, public safety, we're still just a business, really. We have people who are in charge. We got management. We got people that go out and actually do the work. We have various levels of expertise in different things, and all of it has to work together so that we put out the best possible product. Now, in law enforcement, that's a good public service that we're doing for the communities that we serve. In any other business, though, it's the products you make, making sure they get out to the people who need them and want them, and that you have a smooth team that does things together. This is one of the things I have found in the course of time that is often a problem. When we talk about law enforcement agencies, how many of you have out there have said something like, you know, the most dangerous place for me in my job is in headquarters, right? Because we're concerned about what goes on in there. And that's unfortunate. It shouldn't be that way. Especially in today's day and age, we have a need to reinvent ourselves, provide the proper services to the communities that we need, but we need to do it professionally. So I want to take us out of this mindset that we are so unique in what we do that there's no connection to the rest of the world, and we're completely wrong. There is a connection to the rest of the world. And my guest, Ms. Kiki Orski from Peak Performance is the name of her company. Kiki is going to tell you a little bit about what she does. She is amazing. I've personally had the experience of watching her do what she does with the company I'm involved with, and it has transformed the management team of the company from a bunch of people who really are good at what they do, but going in 72 different directions, to pulling us all together and knitting a team that goes forward with a common goal and a common way of getting things done. It's really helped. So Kiki, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. So tell us a little bit, first of all, about yourself. What do you do? Where are you located? How do we know about Kiki?
Oh, so I am a native New Yorker, born and bred in Brooklyn, New York, so I can hold my own against the best of them. But I'm right now on Long Island, about 30 miles outside of Manhattan.
Outstanding. And your company, yeah. Peak Performance, how long has that been around, and what kind of customers do you deal with?
Yeah, so Peak Performance has been in existence for over 22 years now. And I'm still 28 years old. So that's pretty impressive. Just that alone is awesome. I work with executive teams, Joe, and I work with executive teams across all industry. And these are the teams who realize they could or should be getting better results. And for some reason, they're not achieving the level of success. We like to call it next level success that they expect of themselves or that others expect of them, perhaps a board or a higher power. And so I work with organizations like Air France and Chick-fil-A and local Long Island companies and health systems across the country. So I've had the privilege of working with many, many, many teams. And what you just said earlier about how the police department may be unique, and I have a husband who's a retired New York City captain out of sex crimes in New York City, so I'm very familiar with your world. Yes, we each company and each team has its own unique culture, but just like with people, teams have more that is alike among the teams than is different. So we're really not as unique as we think.
Right. So that would be my first question to people that are listening out here. Maybe you are a business, a company that makes widgets, or maybe you are a service company or a law enforcement agency. Really, do you see the structure, the management structure of all of those groups as kind of common? They all have the same needs and wants, even though they're unique in what they do.
It's very interesting. Everybody, those of you out there that are answering that question, I wonder if you'll feel the same, but you do feel like, oh, my business is different. My challenges are different. And once again, yes, you are unique in your own way, but the challenges you're facing right now, especially now that we're experiencing hopefully the down after, you know, COVID's big surges, is we're all struggling getting help. we're all struggling with the Great Resignation. We're all struggling with mental health and with getting the people and the supply chain and progress and process. We're all struggling with it. With that being said, having tools in your toolkit that you can apply to your unique business is imperative as a leader. And unfortunately, technical expertise, clinical or specific expertise is not enough as a leader in this world that's changing so rapidly and so quickly, is so volatile.
Okay, that puts us in the right spot here for this conversation, because I know that we have a diverse group listening here, and I want to make sure that everybody understands. Yeah, you might be a different kind of business, but if you have a structure in your thing, you have leadership and you have people who are doing the work and you have managers and supervisors, we're all in the same boat here. And we really need the same kind of concept. So that's where Kiki really brings a lot of expertise to us. So Kiki, today we were going to talk about psychological safety. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the concept of psychological safety. And if you've never heard of that before, and a lot of the terms we're going to talk about are things that you might know inherently. Right. You might know them already. You just don't know them by the terms that they go by. And that's where Kiki's going to help us through all of this, because we want to use the proper terms. We want to know the right concepts so that we can help our teams be better. So psychological safety, if you were to give us a definition of that, what is it we're going to talk about? What is the definition of psychological safety?
Thank you, Joe. I think you're right. We do know a lot of this intuitively, but when it is not shared among everyone and verbalized out loud, then what ends up happening is it's not repeatable, right? So when we put an idea out there into the public like this and we name it and we claim it, then you can start using it. It's not going to be only when my intuition kicks in. It's going to be a repeatable process you can use. So I love this definition. It's by Timothy Clark. And psychological safety is a condition in which you feel included, safe to learn, safe to contribute, and safe to challenge the status quo, all without fear of being embarrassed, marginalized, or punished in some way.
Wow, that's a great definition. And I'm going to try now take it and squeeze it into experience and how we can use that. So if I'm the leader, and there's all different kinds of leaders, and if I'm the kind of leader that only wants to hear what I say echoed back to me, then I think a lot of my people are not going to feel psychologically safe to be honest or to give me their opinion or to go out on a limb and say, let's try this, because I know that the leader only wants to hear their own thoughts echoed back to them.
Right.
But if I am a leader that is open to providing the best environment for people so that I can provide the best service or the best widget or the best law enforcement team for my community, then being open and understanding how my subordinates, how the people who do the work for me, how they feel empowered to speak up and maybe say, well, hey, listen, chief, or hey, boss, what about this idea, without feeling marginalized or that I'm going to give them that look? Because I've had a boss like that. He told everybody, listen, I don't want people just to say, being a bunch of yes men and women. I want to hear the truth from you. And as soon as you gave him the truth, he stepped on you. So, you know, it was one thing to say it, but another to do it. So let's talk about psychological safety, Kiki. Where are we going here? What do people need to know about it?
Yeah. Well, going back to your example where it happened to you, where that boss said, yes, I want to hear, and then stepped on you. Did you ever vocalize an original opposing or an alternative thought ever again?
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the sound of my rescue dog, Arthur, who
hi, Arthur.
Can't help himself, but he likes to say hi when people come in and out of the house. So that's another nice thing we do here, is we do rescue dogs to try and help them. Awesome. But Kiki, get back to your question. I'm sorry for that interruption there. So, but hey, it's the modern world of working from home and dealing with COVID. So
And it's nice to hear life blooming all around. So with that leader, you gave us an example of a leader who said, yes, I want to hear your thoughts. Challenge me. Go ahead. But when you did do it, stomped on you.
Right.
Did you ever give an original thought or oppose that person ever again after that?
Me personally, I did. But here's what happened with me. I did it very professionally, because I started to realize, you know, who this person was. And that they did. He was not a good leader, put it that way.
Yeah.
And I always continued to bring up what I thought was right or what was necessary. And eventually I was asked to not attend the meetings anymore. Because I constantly would bring up, if I agree with him, I would agree. But he says, I want to know when something different, and I would tell him. So eventually I had my superior came to me and said, listen, the chief appreciates your input and everything, but you don't have to come to the meetings anymore. And I didn't. And it was unfortunate because I had a lot to offer. And I thought it would, eventually the whole team simply were zombie team. They just went there. He spouted out what he was going to say. They repeated it back to him. And that was the meeting. There was no interaction. And the department went downhill pretty quick. I mean, the reputation, the skill, everybody's desire to do the job went downhill pretty quick.
Yeah.
I contrast that with another company that I work with now, where the owner, the CEO says, I really want to hear from people. And he really does. He really wants to hear your ideas. Yeah. I sat there at the first couple of meetings when people would challenge an idea or a concept that he brought up. And instead of him attacking people, he contemplated, he took notes, he got back to you, he helped flesh out the idea. So it made for a better team. But that chief that was bad, and if you're that kind of chief, you really want to reconsider what you're doing. If you have to work for somebody like that, I feel bad for you. But maybe in time, we're going to have Kiki help us figure out how maybe to make that better. So go ahead, Kiki. I just want to get off on the trail there.
Yeah, no, all of what you said is super. And Joe, I love that you still disagreed with that person, that leader in public. The problem is you're very rare. And usually what happens is once someone disagrees and they're stomped on, that's it, right? They just cut, they stop, they're done. Mm-hmm. And they say, fine, I tried. Nobody wants to listen to me.
Right.
And so we want to create an environment because honestly, the wisdom is in the room, right? Mm-hmm. You want to get that collective wisdom, the idea, because that's where the innovations, that's where problem solving happens. That's where decisions should be made. Mm-hmm. But when we stop it, we stop the flow of information from transferring from person to a person, it destroys the business. It destroys the team. Mm-hmm. The alternative of what can happen is you end up with groupthink. Everybody just agrees and we all agree and then no change is ever made. And we find 20 years later, we're doing the same old thing, complaining about the same old things.
Right. I guess I would say the results that we got, that we went from a highly productive, aggressive police department that was doing amazing work. We were looked at by other agencies as leaders in what we did. And when this boss took over, it basically put everybody on the path of they didn't want to get stepped on.
Yeah.
Because there was a couple of things. When you say it was unique, what was unique about it was that I felt it was my responsibility to the people below me to make sure I spoke up and said something, even if it wasn't going to be taken, even if it was going to step on me, I had a responsibility to say it, to bring it up to the management team that it was there. The other thing I understood was that I was pretty much cutting off my route for advancement. And I find that's what a lot of people, the reason they shut up is that they want to be on the right team so that they can get that advancement. Unfortunately, I think what you're telling us is when that happens, when you function like that, you're dysfunctional because you're not getting the best ideas. You're not getting the best opportunity to do things. You're all just kind of working in your own silos to survive, right?
Yeah. And it's unfortunate when that happens. And I think that's career limiting. And if it isn't, it should be. Because they don't hire leaders to be the one voice. They hire, in my opinion, leaders are hired because they're able to get the best out of their people, right? We're role models. And it's interesting because Google did one of the biggest companies out there. Google did some research both in Project Oxygen on what makes a great leader. And then their second one, Project Aristotle. And this has been published in the New York Times. It's been out there for a couple of years now. And what it found was that the best teams in Google, right? The best teams, what really mattered on the team was less about who is on the team, but more about how the team worked together. It wasn't just about who led the team. And so if we can take that research of thousands and put it towards your command, towards your precinct, towards your office, your business in the law enforcement world. Wow. What an exciting place it could be. You can get the advancement that we need nowadays. We can innovate. We can become more efficient. And the one other thing I just wanted to get in there before we lose time is I just want you to have an idea of some of the statistics. As a leader, if you're able to embrace and learn more about psychological safety and how to build it on your team, then the research from Gallup just in 2019 shared that there's a 27% possibility of reduction in turnover. I don't know about you.
That's huge right now everywhere.
But everybody's losing people with the Great Resignation, whether we believe, regardless of what the reason is, we've got to be able to keep the best people. Let the ones who are not a good fit, not good role models, not experienced, not let them leave. But rarely on a good team, rarely are people who can't meet the expectations of everyone able to survive. But on a bad team, what ends up happening is we lose our best people. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to lose your best people because you didn't consider psychological safety. Right. So that's really important, I think.
I think it is too. Now, when we were talking earlier, we were talking about the definition of psychological mm-hmm. safety, and you had mentioned three things that come up within that. Let's break that down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So they feel safe to learn. When we talk about a team that feels safe to learn, that means it's a team that feels safe to say, I don't know, right? When somebody is comfortable saying, I don't know, I need help, where can I get this information? We find that those teams have less errors, have less mistakes, have less trouble in their processes because people are willing to verbalize their needs. That's number one. So they feel safe to learn. They feel safe to say what they don't know and are willing to admit they need help. Mm-hmm. As a leader of a command or a precinct or an office or a building, you don't want the proverbial snowball to go down the hill before you find out, right? I would imagine as a leader, mm-hmm. you want to find out early if people don't know the best way to complete a process or to address a problem.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's important for a leader that your team feels comfortable to say, whoa, I don't know, let's get this right now in the beginning so we do it right now rather than having to clean up a mess.
Sure.
Number two, go ahead.
No, I said that's absolutely right. That's great.
Yeah, safe to contribute. Just like with that old leader, we have to be careful as role models that our rhetoric matches our reality, right? We got to make sure the words we're using are really what is going to be evidenced the moment that the employees hear it. So if you say you want the truth, you as a leader have to learn how to keep your mouth closed for that 1 minute to hear that truth and understand what happens to you personally if somebody disagrees with you, right? Mm-hmm. Not only what happens to you psychologically, right? You feel threatened, you feel attacked, you feel less than, whatever that may be. But what happens to you physically, right? With the brain and with the chemicals and how you're, we go into fight, flight, or freeze. As a leader, you need to understand that. And we need to make sure our people feel safe also to contribute that you're not going to flip your lid, mm-hmm. right? And then the third one, they feel safe to challenge the status quo. It is one of my biggest pet peeves when I go into any organization, and it doesn't matter what industry, Joe, when the leaders walk out the room and I talk to the people doing the work and they roll their eyes and shake their head and said, nobody listens to us. This is not working. This isn't the best way. I know a better way to do it, a more efficient way, a quicker way to save money. But they can't question it because they get stomped on or nobody listens.
Right.
they're the, you know, you don't want your employees driving home at night going or in the morning going, if somebody would just listen to me, I could make it better here. You want to hear that. You want to be innovative. The best leaders are the ones where people want to follow, where they're doing good things, where they're open to innovation and learning and trying and challenging and getting the best results for both the clients we serve and the employees that are in our care.
Right. And I think that's 100% correct, because if we were having a burglary spree in town, right? Mm-hmm. And here I am, the lieutenant, I'm going to come down. I have all the statistics. I know we're getting hit every day. I have pressure from up above, the mayor, they're upset. The residents are upset. I would go to the briefing and I could do one of two things. I could either direct everybody how to deal with this problem, which every single day I got to go in and direct every single thing. Or I could go to the supervisors and say, listen, we're having a burglary problem. How do you think you and the troops can handle this? Mm-hmm. And then they talk amongst themselves and you find out that maybe the sergeant says we should post up on the highway and look for strangers walking around. And you get some cops sitting there going, listen, nobody really comes in off the highway. I think we should watch out by the woods where people could come through. And that's where they're hitting all these houses. Oh, well, let's give that a try. Next thing you know, you solve your burglary spree because of all the things that you just cited, you have an employee willing to speak up,
yeah,
to give an idea, and you have a sergeant willing to listen, or a supervisor, whoever it is, to listen and say, okay, let's flesh that out and let's give it a try, as opposed to, no, listen, here's what we're going to do. And this is the only way we're going to do it. And that doesn't, you don't get the ideas out of people. You don't get them thinking on their own. And that's really what you want as a leader. I know that's what I wanted as a leader. They knew what mission I gave everyone. This is my vision of how we can keep our community safe, whether it was drugs or assaults or robberies, whatever. And now you do the work out there. You know the best way to do it. Just keep me informed. Let me know what you're doing and I'll give you information if you need it. I'll add expertise to you. I'll send you for training. I'll do all kinds of things for you, but you get it done. And as a leader, I was confident then that my people were growing. It made the job better for them, because they could actually do, they weren't just zombies sitting there doing what they're told. They were thinking and acting, and it helps make them better future leaders, I would think. Yeah. Wouldn't you think?
You know what? I love what you just said, Joe, because I think that's your responsibility as a leader of today to be grooming our leaders of tomorrow.
No question about it.
Yeah. And I love that. And to motivate, if you want, that mutual relationship, right? And we know those relationships. We've all had it where you had one employee, one cop, one leader who, you know, you just work, you do anything for that person, right? You know that. And you also know we've probably had a leader or, you know, a subordinate who you'd be like, I will do the very little that I can do, just enough to get us through. And so you want to have more of that first relationship where it's symbiotic. Everybody works together to do the best, where we all want to show up and do our best. And here's a question which always surprises me. Leaders will ask me in all industry, they'll say to me, well, Kiki, they hired me to have all the answers. No, they don't. Because when, as a leader, we make decisions with the information we have in ourselves at the moment, right? Wouldn't you rather have the information of 12 or 15 members of your team or members of your command? That's where the beauty lies. And one day I would love to take you on a journey into appreciative inquiry. Because appreciative inquiry, Joe, is about how do we get the best out of people and not just use our past solutions to solve problems. It's a new way for leaders to think and truly capitalize on the wisdom in the room.
Kiki, I think that's great. And I think we should absolutely actually set aside a whole program on that, because that's what we want to bring to people from you. This is what you bring to any organization, these concepts. I guess to business, they're probably a little more open to it. PD might say to themselves, well, we don't work like that, but they're wrong. You know, when you say, as the leader, my response, they hired me because they're counting on my judgment and my ability to make decisions about things. I can't make those decisions if I don't have the right information. I expect that to come from my people. The people bring me the information, and then my job is to decipher it and make a decision. Okay. And that doesn't mean I make every decision about what they do. I need their input. And that's where having this openness can help everything, including a police department. You know, the chief can be the chief. You can be the boss. You're the one. Okay. But you need your people. And that's where I think understanding this concept of psychological safety for your people has a role in any business that you're running or that you're a part of out there, and any police department. So Kiki, I want to thank you very much for coming on talking about it with us today. And we can follow up with a little bit more. Maybe we'll get an article or two out of you and we can put that out there too. Now, if somebody wanted your service, if they said, listen, my organization, my PD, my business is a train wreck with my management, how can Kiki help me? How would they reach out and find you? How would they get you?
Yeah, I like to be the first one to get all the queries to working with me and my team. So please email Kiki, K-I-K-I, at peakperformanceleader.com. I only work with organizations that want to make a difference. And building a strong team, building psychological safety, helping a leader to be the very, very best, because I use the definition, a leader is someone people want to follow. And so I'm truly selective about the companies that I work with, because the companies, the commands, the precincts, doesn't matter the size of the team. It's about the willingness to say, yeah, you know what? There may be a way to do it differently. We can do better. So Kiki@peakperformanceleader.com.
Kiki@peakperformanceleader.com. So if you want to fix up your PD, you want to help your organization move forward, Kiki can certainly help you do. Kiki, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it. And we will have Kiki back on again, because there is a lot to talk about when it comes to leading, managing, and doing the right thing with our businesses, our police departments. Every organization can benefit from what Kiki knows, and we're going to find out. So Kiki, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, everybody. I think that was a great segment with Kiki.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com. HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutloud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. So I hope you enjoyed Kiki. She is really a professional. I've had personal experience, like I said, when I was talking with her, with being there. She is an amazing person to help a company, any organization, move forward. So along those lines, you know, we always talk about politics here. We go on and on about the politics. And right now, I guess we can all say that I think we're all disappointed in our leadership. You know, every once in a while, I come across one of these topics, these concepts. And leadership is one I come back to a few times because it's important. Without good leadership, any organization is going to fail. And our country is really an organization, right? Aren't we all organized together? We have a set of beliefs, we set of rules, we all have obligations and responsibilities, and we all get benefits from it. But if we don't have good leadership, then we're going to suffer. You know, currently, our country is undergoing this huge internal fistfight about where we should go as a country, what we should be all about. You know, should we be a more socialist kind of a place? Should we stick traditional America? Or are we going to fight it out in the streets? Is this the American Cold War, internal Cold War that I see coming that I talked about a couple of episodes ago? So in sticking with leadership, when we look at the president we have now, Joe Biden, I don't think he inspires many people. I think the fact of the matter is that he's not at the top of his game, which I think is unfortunate as we see the rest of the world is starting to get clued in past the nonsense of American media and politics to realize that he's probably not all there, which is not a safe place to be. Because you kind of hope that in the background, there's a bunch of people back there that are really running the show so that, you know, should Joe actually fall apart completely, there'll be somebody there to pick up the pieces. Now, do we know that there are those people are there? We don't. We have Kamala Harris as the vice president, who she doesn't seem to be very good at getting along with people. She doesn't seem to inspire anyone. So I don't know that that's really an option for our country. And we're seeing Putin, and we're seeing President Xi in China, and we're seeing all of these things going on and around the world where they're challenging American leadership because there doesn't seem to be any. They watch us and hear us on the TV and on radio and every place else. They hear us fighting with each other to the point that we can't function in the same room with somebody that you disagree with because it's not just a matter of different point of view. And, you know, you can learn from somebody or you can at least make your case better. We can't even sit in the same room with each other. We don't want to talk. It comes to fighting, whether it's verbal or physical. We're seeing our country tear itself apart from within. We see crime completely out of control. All of this is a result of a lack of leadership. Now, when I talked to Kiki, I talked about a boss I had a long time ago who basically said one thing and did another. You know, told all of us in the management team, hey, listen, I want you to come to me with your ideas. I don't want yes men and women. I want you to be honest with me. I want you to call me out. And it was great until we did it. And then once we did it, he shut everybody down. And unfortunately, the agency suffered as a result of it. To this very day, it suffered because the leadership that did come up was not legitimate leadership in the sense of that they had learned through trial by fire. They learned through not getting themselves in trouble by just agreeing and learning to lead the way that person led. And it wasn't good. He wasn't a good leader. He didn't inspire people. He made people concerned for their futures. He went after people. He charged them, took days off from them. So basically, you did just have that zombie squad. When we look at leadership in any organization, look at yourself. If you're a leader, are you a good leader or are you one of those poor leaders? You know, that's a constant question you have to ask yourself. So we see the rest of the world now challenging our president and challenging us as a nation. We have to be concerned about that. It's a legitimate problem. And we're seeing it happen more and more. We have 3 more years of this. You know, is Joe going to be better 3 years from now than he is today? Unfortunately, I think we all know that the ravages of age, which are going to get all of us, some of us sooner rather than later, the ravages of age slow down our mental acumen, our ability to think, our ability to do things. And President Joe Biden is already suffering that. And he's going to be tested, I think, in big ways as the days go forward. And we're all going to be tested. When we look at the crime out in the streets, you know, why is that taking place? Because we have weak leaders in charge of our cities and towns who are allowing crime to go unpunished. We actually have people purposely not going after crime, releasing criminals back into the society. And who does that help? Well, it helps the criminals. That's it. And criminals learn very, very quickly, people who were going to take advantage of other people, that, hey, they're weak. I'll take advantage of them. So you're seeing these people go out and commit crime after crime after crime. They get arrested. They get right back out on the street. It never ends, and it's only getting worse. The attacks on law enforcement are a vivid example of the state of our safety and where we're at as a country. One of the things I used to say all the time was, if someone is willing to attack a police officer, then they would be willing to attack anybody, right? Because at least the police represented the ability to fight back. You know, if you're going to go attack a cop, you know, a cop has a baton. A cop might have a stun gun. Cop might have pepper spray. Cop has a gun. Cop can protect themselves, right? The average citizen does not have those things. So therefore, I can jump you in a dark alley, beat you, rob you, rape you, and kill you. And it's not a lot you can do. When people step up their attacks and are not afraid to attack a police officer, do you think they have any concern about attacking you? Or are they more emboldened? You know, we're seeing these attacks, these random ambush attacks on law enforcement. Now, the people that are doing it are cowards. They walk up on a cop who's having a sandwich or a cup of coffee or sitting in their patrol car or something, and they shoot them through the window. They're not calling them out to a duel. So they're cowards. They're dangerous to all of us. But the fact is, the attacks are on the rise, and that's just a barometer of where we are. So if you think it's going to get better on its own, then you better think again. All right. So we're in a very, very strange place. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that, some of the threats that we face. Now, one of the threats that we have faced from Russia and from China is cybercrime, right? Cyber hacking, cyber attacks on us. Now, you might not have thought about this too much. You might not have given it a lot of thought in your life. If you have a computer, you know, if you're on social media, you might have been hacked on social media. Somebody got into your account and they start sending friend requests to people, or they send out dirty films or whatever under your name, and it goes out and people think you're sending them pornography and all that kind of stuff. And that's frustrating enough, but that's the extent that most people are aware of that kind of a problem. The next level cyber problem that you can have is you might fall prey to some kind of a ransom attack or through a phishing attack. And these are new terms for all of us, you know, and the older you go, you know, the older in life you go, the less you might know about these things. You know, our elderly population, they are very, very prone to being taken in by a scam or some kind of a cyber attack because they're online. They have smartphones and they're online. They have accounts. They're on social media trying to connect with family and friends, and they can easily be duped into things. So cybercrime on those two levels are bad. And you could have found yourself, if you have a business and somebody inadvertently opens an email and clicks on a link that they think looks realistic. Next thing you know, your computers are taken over and you have to pay a ransom to get your computers back on. And all your data can be stolen. All your data can be frozen out. You can be destroyed. That is a serious problem. And as we get into the bigger and bigger kinds of attacks, we see that the Chinese and the Russians have done cyber attacks on us. Now, do I think we haven't done them on them? Of course we did. I think a few years back, our cyber experts got into the Iranian nuclear plan, right? And they turned all the machines they had going that were making the fissionable material, they turned them on and made them burn out, you know, thousands of them at one time. So we do it as well. It's a powerful tool when the whole world works on digital energy, cyber energy, and we interact, and all of our information and our technology is based on this. We're all prone to have a problem. So one of the things that I found is there's a thought. So if you're a business person out there, you have a business, and maybe you have 10 employees, 20 employees, or 1,000, and they're on computers, and they're doing things. Maybe you have intellectual property that you own. Maybe you've created something. You have a patent on something. You have people's information, because they buy things from you, their credit card information, their personal information, banks and doctors' places and stuff like that. You might not be aware of the kind of things that could get you. So I did a little research and I started looking into this. You know, my company does safety and security for physical things. We do active shooter protection. We teach people how to de-escalate situations. We teach police officers, all that kind of thing. But as I'm looking at this, I'm saying cybercrime and cyber attacks is something that as a nation, we need to really think about more. We need to understand what it is. So one of the concepts that we need to come across is the understanding the insider threat related to cybercrime. So the first thing you got to do is you got to define what we're talking about. You know, what is the insider threat? When I first heard that, I was looking at a trade show that was looking for presenters and with safety and security. So when I saw the insider threat, I thought of the physical insider. You know, this is the person that works in our building that brings a gun to work and starts to shoot their coworkers, or a student who pulls a gun out of a backpack and starts shooting their fellow students. And then as I started to learn more about it, it wasn't that at all. The insider threat they're talking about here involves using digital assets, getting into your digital assets like through your computer system and stealing your intellectual property, stealing your data, shutting you out, all of these kind of things. So we really need to understand them. We can be tricked, fooled into position. So you have different kinds of insiders. The insider is the person in your organization, no matter what it is, that either purposefully does this to you or inadvertently does it to you. So when you look at inadvertent, how could you do that? Right? Well, we get these phishing attacks, P-H-I-S-I-N-G, phishing, right? That's the word's called. And there's vishing with a V, which is a video or verbal type of an attack. And they'll make a phone call. And these are the ones where they call you up and say, hey, listen, your electric is going to be shut off in 2 hours if you don't provide us with a payment. And you'll argue, I paid my bill. Well, we're going to turn it off. A lot of people get nervous. And they say, okay, I'll make a payment right now. But this is, well, you can take it up with the billing office, but if I don't get the payment now, we're turning your electric off or your water or some other commodity that you need. And what a lot of people will do is not realizing that that's not how the electric company or the water company would go about collecting a bill from you. They whip out the credit card or their debit card and they provide all the information to make a payment. Now, the person might ask you for $200 and you give them that information and they go back into your account and take out every penny that's in your account. It's very hard to get that money back because these are usually overseas, out of the country people. And it's too late by the time you realize you've been scammed. You don't get any of that back. So, and that happens. I was in a school district working one time. And on a Friday afternoon, one of the clerical personnel got an email that looked like it came from her credit card. Now, we'll talk about some of the problems she had, but it looked like it came from her credit card, said, there's a problem with your credit card. So she clicked on it. It opened up and it said, listen, your card is overrun. It's going to be shut down. Whatever the message was, it made her nervous and it said, click this link to provide your identity so we know it was really you and we won't shut the card down. So she clicked the link and that's all it took. Once you click that link, now it comes back and they have access to your entire computer because there's programs running in the background once you click that link. Well, what happened was that she went there, she put in her personal information, and then for whatever reason, the message never changed. You know, she put it in and submit, nothing ever changed. So, oh well, she went home for the weekend. All that was happened there was that somebody sent that email, and the problem was that it was to her work email. And when I talked to her later on, I said, well, do you get your bills, your electric bill and all your credit card bills? Do they come through your work email address? She says, no, they don't. Matter of fact, they got through my personal email. I said, well, were you on your personal email? No, I was on my work email. Then why would somebody send a message to your work email that you never use? Well, she never thought of that. She just saw her credit card had a problem. She clicked on it. And once she clicked that link, the malware, the bad computer program was downloaded into the entire system for the whole school. And by Monday morning, it had infected all 3,000 computers, the mainframe, everything in the computer system of the school. And it shut everything down. We couldn't get any information out. And lots of people's personal information was at risk. Well, we got a message shortly at the end of that. When you see your computer, it says, if you want to restore your computer system, you have to pay, I think it was $40,000 they wanted. So that's a ransom attack. They shut your system down. They have control of it. And they want money. Now, you might not get a $40,000 attack. They might go to you and say, for $3,000, we'll return your computer. How much stuff is on your computer that you wouldn't want to lose? Photographs, pictures, bank account information, right? So a lot of people will pay the $3,000 to get their computer back. And inevitably, these people will come back again and try another phishing attack because they know you pay. Well, my school district they were lucky. They had some very talented people in internet technology. They basically shut the whole system down, and they blanked every single computer and reloaded all the information back up by hand because they had backup. They had everything backed up on-site and off-site, and they didn't have to pay the ransomware, but they had it took at least 10 days to go through all the computers, blank them, and reload everything. It was a big disruption to the organization. So this is an important thing. That was somebody who was victimized as an unwitting. You know, this woman wasn't purposely trying to get into a problem. She just fell to the scam. I know there's other people that you'll see. My son, right? He's a smart young man. And I'm at his house one day doing something there, helping him out. And he's inside and he comes, hey, he goes, Dad, the IRS is on the phone here and they're telling me they're going to come and arrest me because something wrong with my taxes from 2 years ago. Well, the IRS doesn't do that. They don't say, send you a phone call and tell you they're going to come arrest you because there's a problem with your taxes from 2 years ago. That's not how it works. But it sounded very realistic. And when people hear IRS, they jump, right? Because you don't want to have a problem with them. So my son tells me, get on the phone with this guy, and he gets on there and he says, we have a warrant for your son's arrest because of his 2017 taxes. And if he doesn't pay $3,000 today, they're going to come and get him. Well, I knew from being in law enforcement that this was a complete and total scam. It sounded realistic. It made my son nervous to think someone was going to come and arrest him. So I kept questioning the person on the phone. I said, matter of fact, what police agency is going to come and arrest him? Well, don't worry about that, but we have the warrant. Well, good. Come on over and get him, you know, because I'm law enforcement and I'll be waiting here for you and I'll help you make the arrest when you get here. Well, we went back and forth for about 15 minutes and finally this guy just got tired of talking to me because he guess he wasn't getting anywhere and he hung up. Now, of course, nobody ever came to arrest my son. There was no warrant from the IRS because he had a problem with his taxes. But lots of people fall prey to that. There was one older fella that I know, and he calls me up one time and he says, hey, listen, I need to get Apple cards, Apple, you know, like a Visa card. You know, you buy it, you put money on it. I need to get Apple cards. Where can I get them? And I said, why would you want Apple cards? And he says, oh, well, there's a problem with my bank. My bank says I have to pay some bill or whatever. And if I don't pay, they're going to shut my account down and they want $500 in Apple cards. Well, companies don't take Apple cards or Visa gift cards or any kind of gift card as payment. That's ridiculous. But people fall prey to that scam all the time as well. So our older residents, because you got to remember, they come from a generation where they took care of their problems right away. If they owed somebody money, for the most part, they wanted to pay them. So if they called up and said it's the IRS or it's their bank or it's something like that, and you got to go get these cards, they don't know no better. I guess that's how they're doing business now, and they go and look for these cards and buy them. There was one store that was that called us when we were when I was in law enforcement, and said this woman came in 3 weeks in a row, an older woman, and bought $3,000 or $4,000 worth of gift cards. And the third time she was buying them, the manager asked her, you know, why are you buying all these gift cards for? It's not my business, but you know what, you're buying a lot of gift cards. And she says, oh, I have to pay my bills with them. And the manager, what do you mean you have to pay your bills? And she says, well, I had a problem with one of my credit cards, and this is the only way to pay it. Well, the manager realized it was a scam, called the police, and we tried to help her, but she lost all that money. You know, she sent those cards to the criminal, and that was the end of that. She lost all her money. So you have the unwitting person who falls scam to it, but then you can also have an employee that is purposely doing this to you. Maybe they're disgruntled. Maybe they feel they don't make enough money at your company. Maybe they don't like something that's going on there, or they think they can make money stealing your intellectual property. You know, so there's different concerns you can have, whether somebody purposely does it to you or unwittingly, but you want to make sure you have some kind of program. You tell your family, explain to your family that's not how things are done. People don't call you on the phone, threaten to arrest you if you don't pay with gift cards and stuff like that. But we also want to look at ways to deter the insider threat who is really dangerous. You know, the disgruntled employee or somebody seeking revenge, right? Maybe somebody got fired or didn't get a promotion or whatever, and they decide they're going to go after you and try and hurt you. So here's some things that you can do. Right, get a pencil and paper. Lieutenant Joe's going to help you out here. And what I find is when I talk to a lot of people, a lot of smaller businesses, you know, 20 employees, 10 employees. They have all these computer systems, but they have no idea that they're at risk from this kind of thing. So here's some things you can do. You want to develop a data classification and handling plan to you can leverage loss against high-risk data. You know, what stuff are you going to let out and what don't you let out? Who can offer information? Who has access to the data on your systems? So one of the things you want to do is make sure that all your employees, interns, anybody else that has legitimate access to your data, that they get some kind of training on phishing and vishing with a V and ransomware attacks so they don't fall prey to it. So do a training for them. Let them know. Let them understand that if they see something they're not sure of, they should ask somebody before clicking a link. Very important. Today we have remote workers, don't we? People working remotely all over the place. So make sure you have a remote worker policy for how they can access data, what systems they can get into, and provide the training for them so they understand these concerns. Do good background checks on your people. You know, make sure you don't have people who've been in trouble before that may steal things. And if there's an opportunity to steal from you, it's just a different way of stealing. You push a keystroke and you know, you can steal money from your employer. You want to have very strict data access control protocols. Maybe not everybody has access to everything in your system, right? Maybe there's just like on checks, some businesses have two signatures required on a check. So somebody can't be embezzling money by themselves. They have to get someone else involved, and that usually prevents that. So maybe you have two-step authentication kind of a thing for getting into certain programs. Somebody clicks in, and then someone else has to acknowledge that they're going in and clicks in and lets them in so we know who's in there. Develop a sign-off policy related to employee access and let them know when they're logged in and when they're logged out. They can't log in from home. Passwords are important. One of the things I see a lot with the revenge kind of a thing where the employee is trying to get back at you, if they get fired, we don't take all their stuff from them. We don't take their key cards. We don't it's empty their accounts right then and there. You know, you should sign them off, pull them out of your system. Because they'll leave and they'll have the key cards. They'll have their passwords and they can go in from home, from their home computer and go into your system and mess you all up. So if you're going to fire somebody, if someone's going to be terminated, make sure before you give them that final notice, you have your IT people in the background disabling all their connections and everything so they can't get back into your system. If people are working from home, you might want to have a very strong personal device policy. Right? You say, oh, well, my people are working from home. I'm keeping them safe. I'm being a good COVID employer. That's great. But if they're using their own computers, right, and they have access to your system, that can certainly be a problem. So make sure you understand what's going on with that. All right, we talked about password policies. Make sure you teach people how to use good passwords. Make sure they're good and strong. They don't give them out to anybody, that kind of thing. All right, so this is an important area for us to consider because we've seen major hits on our big companies. What was the pipeline, the big gasoline pipeline last spring that got hit? And they got shut down, and that was a cyber attack from a disgruntled employee who was fired, and they didn't take him off the system, and he went out and decided to get back at them, and he shut down the gasoline for the entire east coast of the United States, especially the southeast United States, for a couple of weeks. It was was very difficult for everybody, and that was just a simple cyber mistake. So we think about those things, and it can certainly be a problem for you. So I hope that provides you a little bit of help. This is a little bit of different information from Lieutenant Joe today. You know, talking with Kiki, I want to thank her again. If you need any help like that, you know, I can certainly endorse Kiki. Like I said, I've had experience with what she does, and I've watched her transform a company that had brilliant people in it, all smart and good at what they did, but not a lot of experience in how to work together in team. They, you know, they're all working in silos. Everybody has their own little thing they're on. And if you have a team, you want that team to all be working the same way. So you can reach out to Kiki. It's Kiki at peakperformanceleader.com. Peakperformanceleader.com. It's Kiki, K-I-K-I. She's really smart. She'll answer your questions. She'll help you, let you know if she can help you or not. And that's I endorse her. That's why I'm putting her stuff out there. All right. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to see how leadership is going to come into sharp, sharp focus for us. The 2022 elections are going to be fully underway. We're going to start to see people come out. We're going to see people making promises. We're going to see events around the world and how they're going to play out based on leadership, whether our president is going to be smart enough to handle the things that are going on. I don't just mean smart enough. I just mean if he can physically and mentally handle what's going on, who's playing in the background, you know, who's helping him in the background. We hear, you know, Jen Psaki comes out and says ridiculous things that everybody knows are absurd, but she says them anyway. And we see the press just eat it all up. Every bit of that is going to come home to roost. We live in right now in this bubble where we think, you know, this internal argument we're having, this cold war that we're having in our own country really is about what bathrooms we're allowed to use and what words we can say and what words we can't, and canceling people that we don't agree with, you know, shutting them out and shunning them and destroying free speech because we don't like what people say. All of this is a distraction. All of this is a danger to our very existence. And I think in the next few weeks, with what's going to happen with the Russians and Putin and with the Chinese, I think we'll, you know, wait till after the Olympics before we see the Chinese do anything. But I think we're going to see some very serious incidents take place in the world, and it's going to affect us. And we're going to see the value of good, strong, powerful leadership that we don't necessarily have right now. And it's going to make all of these nonsense arguments, the things that we're fighting with each other about, is going to pale in comparison to what we may have to deal with. You know, right now, your gasoline, you're paying, what, $3, $4 a gallon? Well, that's because of policy, and that's because of leadership, and that's because of the way we have made these decisions as a people, and now we're suffering the consequences. The supply chain is shut down. Why? All of these shutdowns, we're finding out now that we gave in to all this COVID, and we're finding out now that the lockdowns really did nothing to prevent the spread of the disease or the deaths. Johns Hopkins University did a study for many years that they concluded less than 0.2% of people who died from COVID would have been prevented because of the lockdowns. So basically the lockdowns destroying the economy of our country, other countries, the world, throwing us into this chaos was unnecessary. And now we have to try and dig our way out. Well, that's going to take great leadership. That's going to take great courage. And that's going to take great change. I don't know if we're up for the job. I think we're going to find out. I don't mean to be pessimistic, but we all need to think about it and the value of leadership. So listen, remember, be a part of the solution out there. Don't be a part of the problem. Stay strong, seek the truth, and we'll see you next here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.